Snapper, you are in luck. This episode, My Mother's Daughter, features not one, but two of the most requested Snap Judgment stories ever. I am so proud of these women for sharing their soul, their genius, their voice on Snap. You should be proud too, because this is your show. Understand plainly, for a new season of Snap Storytelling, it's going to take 4,000 new listeners to step up and donate at snapjudgment.org. That clock is ticking. Can you hear it? Can you hear it? So if you want stories to matter, even if someone is undocumented, trans, brown, Muslim, white, female, straight, black, whatever they are, whatever you are, donate now at snapjudgment.org. Snap is, I'm asking. Pause the show. Pause it. This ain't about waiting for somebody else. You with the headphones on, you in the car, the bus, the train, the gym, you, Snapper. This is your thing. Pause the show and donate whatever makes sense to you at snapjudgment.org. Get great gifts, including a special session where Snap producers reveal their secrets of storytelling, or get the Snap Live legendary filmed download, or the Snap Music mixtape, or get all the gifts. It's easy. Spread love one story at a time. Support Snap Judgment Storytelling right now at snapjudgment.org. Thanks. My mother always wanted a daughter. Always. Because a daughter would understand. A daughter would talk. A daughter you wouldn't have to explain stuff to, because a daughter just knows. The hair, the dresses, the mystery, the knowledge, so much to share, so much. But first, my mother had me, and I was not a daughter. Then she had my brother, who also was not a daughter. Then my other brother. And she paused. She fretted, she worried, she considered for several years. She stopped. Finally, she and my father decided to roll the dice one final time. The principal knocked on the door of my sixth grade classroom to give me the news. My mother had delivered a baby girl. Happy day! So happy, everything they always wanted. Everything. But even today, I mark it as a time of the beginning of the troubles. So today on Snap Judgment, we proudly present My Mother's Daughter. Amazing stories from the real chip off the real block. My name is Glenn Washington. This show is about something I'll never be, because you're listening to Snap Judgment. Now, we're going to kick off the My Mother's Daughter episode on stage at Snap Live, where super snapper Vijay Nathan has something to get off her chest. Snap Judgment, live. Please put your hands together. Vijay Nathan.
When I was little, I loved riding in the car with my mom because she always let me control the radio. That station wagon was my personal disco. And I became Madonna. Lucky Star, Material Girl, Like a Virgin. That was my favorite. One time I sang the song extra loud to see if my mom knew what the words meant. Like a virgin, touched for the very first time. Lack of was as far as I got. One hand on the wheel, the other at my throat. She said, Vijay, you are not like a virgin. You are a virgin. My sisters and I weren't allowed to talk about or think about sex. According to my mom, sex is only for the Americans. I mean, every day she would tell me that I would get an arranged marriage and that I would never date and that I would be pure and perfect on my wedding night. And I believed this until I went to college. There I met girls who were so carefree and liberated, they consumed men like pieces of cheese. So at 20 years old, even though I was the youngest girl in my family, I decided that I was going to be the first to lose my virginity. But I was going to be smart about it. I wanted a man who would be great in bed, but never break my heart. I found the perfect specimen at my summer job waitressing at the Woodmont Country Club. Kevin Williams. 23. 6'2". Sexy, athletic body. IQ of a mango. No chance of falling in love. So after weeks of making out in his car, I was ready to take the next step. Friday night, I went to the Safeway in the Orthodox Jewish neighborhood so I wouldn't run into anyone that I knew. There, I bought condoms, spermicide, KY jelly, and a Snickers. I didn't want to look like a total deviant to the checkout girl. Saturday night, I went to Kevin's house, and we did it. And I could have been anyone to him, and he could have been anyone to me. And I didn't feel so liberated. Nothing had changed. I was still me. Afterwards, we shared the Snickers. But I decided that I'd wait for love or marriage before I ever did it again. Now, quality time in my family is Sunday brunch at my dad's golf club. He doesn't know how to play, but he insists it's good for business contacts. After the meal, he says, "Let's take a walk, just me, Shanti, Indu, and Vijay." And immediately, I know something is up because my father never, ever physically exerts himself. I start to panic as we stumble past those happy golfing families on to a quiet dirt path. He motions for me and my sisters to sit at a picnic table, turns to my oldest sister and says, "Shanti, are you having sex?" "Dad, I'm a third year resident. I'm too tired to have sex." "Good, good girl. Indu, are you having sex?" "Dad, I'm 26 years old, still living at home. I'm thoroughly repulsed that you're asking me this question." "No, I'm not." "Good, good girl. Vijay, your mother has found something that leads her to believe that you are having sex." I had gotten rid of everything. There was nothing at home that would give me away, so I decided to stay calm, poker-faced, play the reasonable adult. "Daddy, I don't know what you're talking about. What did she find?" "She won't tell me. She said if she tells me, I will kill you." "Look, Vijay, I am a liberal guy. Not like mommy. You can tell me. Yeah? I know you kids, you go to college, you smoke, you drink, you have sex. So tell me, Vijay, are you a virgin?" I didn't want to lie to my dad, because I never directly lied to my parents before. "Well, Dad, I think that's just too personal to discuss. Well then, you've answered my question. And in that moment, I could see that he was no longer looking at me, but through me. And I was losing him, losing my family, losing my place. I'd stopped being good, being the baby, being Indian. I was becoming something different, foreign, American. And I had to make a choice. Daddy, of course I've never had sex. I'm still a virgin. I'm still good. I knew it. Your mother, she's crazy. I told her, my daughters, they're not loose like the Chopra girls, but they're from Bombay. What do you expect? And as he chattered on, I felt the fragility of my life and relief as I saw those shattered pieces moving back into place. I felt so loved, safe, whole. I felt like a virgin.
The incredible Vijay Nathan. Please put this woman in your movie or TV show. Watch the magic happen. The music was composed by Alex Mandel and performed live by Alex and the Snap Judgment Players, David Brandt and Tim Frick. Now, Snappers, did you ever want to know how to tell your story? We've got an instant, special download from Snap producers, each of them giving you their very best advice on how to rock your story in under 3 minutes. This is going to go away, so get it right now for your donation to Snap Judgment Storytelling at snapjudgment.org. Or get something else, the best of Snap Judgment live, art inspired by some of our most compelling stories. Team Snap has created a booming mixtape to get that head bobbing, but the Snap train does not go unless you buy a ticket. It's in you. You've actually downloaded upstream a Snap Judgment special fundraising episode because that's who you are. Think about that. It's what you talk about, what you think about, what you run to, drive to. It's what you share with your spouse. It's what keeps you thinking and engaged. It's in you. SnapJudgment.org. Support the stories you love right now. SnapJudgment.org. Pause the show. Pause it. Pause it right now. Go to snapjudgment.org. Get great stuff. Make Snap happen. Thanks. Now, Snappers, on the My Mother's Daughter Snap Judgment special, we return to the Snap Judgment live stage where I get to introduce the amazing Pia Glenn.
I get home from school, walk in the door, and immediately see the letter addressed to me from NYU. I drop my backpack, damn straight. I drop my backpack, tear it open, and read out loud that I've been accepted. Early decision, scholarship, done deal. My mother stands next to me as I read it, and she high-fives me, just a little too hard. But we're excited, and I'm so happy. See, I had put all my college application eggs in that one basket, and I was in. I float through that evening on a college-bound cloud and eventually go to sleep. I wake up in the middle of the night and I see my mother standing over my bed, but I don't see the knife in her hand until she's bringing it down onto my neck. I feel the pressure from the blade on my skin, but I don't say anything and I don't scream. I have to gauge her lucidity. See, my mother's often violent toward me during her manic or psychotic episodes brought on by bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. I scan her face for a trace of awareness, and I'm about to ask if she knows where she is when she lifts the knife and backs out of the room. The high five from earlier flashes across my mind. It was just a little too hard. She's gone off her medication again. It's my job to monitor her meds and to pay attention to when mommy laughs too loud or cries too long or high-fives me just a little too hard, and I messed up. I get out of bed to check on my brother and disarm my mother and get the phone to call 911, and suddenly two policemen burst into my room. Have you taken any pills? The cops sandwich me in, physically stopping me from leaving the room, and they're shouting, "Tell us what you've taken! Tell us what you've taken!" The cops are here for me. My mother called the police on me. They tell me that, yes, she had called them and told them I was threatening to kill myself. What? No, I absolutely am not. Please, she's not well. I have to go downstairs. I have to check on my brother. The cops give me a quick pat down, and the three of us hustle down the stairs. And there, I see my 11-year-old brother's little face. Seeing him upright and breathing brings some relief, so I turn back to the cops, trying to convince them that she's the dangerous one, not me. My mother's yelling over me, our voices louder and louder, like a terrible duet, and the cops are just staring. Suddenly, my mother produces a pile of tattered papers that look vaguely familiar. She shoves them in the cops' faces, and time stops as I recognize my own anguished handwriting. I watch the cops reading little snatches of my words being used as evidence of my alleged suicide threat. No, 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 you don't understand. When my mother's depressed, she tells me not to talk to her. She tells me to write down anything that I have to say to her. That's why I wrote those letters. I might have been sad because my mother wouldn't talk to me, but please, she's the one who needs help, not me. They're dragging me along, but I will not leave my brother with her. And just when I'm about to stretch myself out across the doorway like a cartoon cat, my mother picks up the guitar she never played and smashes it into the glass top of the coffee table, shattering it. She stands over her mess, huffing and puffing, and the cops finally think maybe they should take her in too. I call the understanding neighbor who sometimes looks after my brother at times like this, and the cops debate calling a second ambulance, but then it's decided that we'll just all ride together. For the whole ride, I stare at my mother, staring into space, and I wonder how I can fix this. It's my job to fix this. When we get to the ER, I'm still considered the threat, and she's a question mark in their minds. But legally, having just turned 17, I'm a minor and she's my mother, and she puts on enough of a show of sanity to sign the paperwork to have me committed. We sit side by side on plastic molded seats in the psychiatric ER in the middle of the night. "Mom, do you know where you are?" She stares straight ahead. "Mom, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that this is all happening." She turns to me and says, without even a hint of recognition in her face, "What do you mean? What's happening?" I turn my face so she won't see me cry. My mother gets up and starts pacing in the waiting area. Pacing is bad. I try to alert the staff, but she lunges at a passing nurse, getting off one clean punch to her head before being tackled to the ground, injected with straight Haldol, and dragged off to be admitted. Well, now they believe me about my mother. I'm begging for someone to believe that I don't need to be hospitalized. And I'm aware that as the hours pass and my begging gets more and more emphatic, I only look more and more unhinged. And I'm still in my pajamas because the police wouldn't let me change. A full day comes and goes, till finally, I'm granted an audience with the head doctor. I plead my case to him in a tiny exam room, and I'm crying here and there as I talk, but when he smiles warmly and says he believes me, I start to sob with relief and the full force of two sleepless nights' exhaustion. The doctor continues, "One thing though, if you're okay, then why are you crying?" He's so smug, but I try to answer him anyway. I'm crying because I just watched my mother attack a nurse and get sedated on the floor, and she tried to kill me, I think, last night or the night before. He just gets up and walks out of the room. A little Medivan transports me to the facility. They confiscate my shoelaces and the drawstring from my funky pajama bottoms and offer me donated clothes that are way too small. I shower with an orderly watching and eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the little cafeteria by myself. And I just wish I could call my brother and check on him. A fellow patient with a full cast on his arm tries to say hi, and I try to hide my fear. He has that same manic look in his eyes as my mom. There's a skeletal girl with a feeding tube in her nose because she won't eat. I cling to my little corner in the therapy room, looking out the closet at the window. On day three, a therapist begins a group session by asking for volunteers to share. And the scruffy boy with the wild eyes and the cast raises his hand. He says, "I'll start." And he points sharply at me and he says, "Why is she here?" Another girl says, yeah, she shouldn't be here. Send her home." There are about 12 of us in the room and everyone chimes in and the boy with the cast is banging it on the table and they're saying, "Send her home, send her home." And then he starts hitting himself in the head with the cast, hard. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm crazy. This is crazy. She's not crazy. Send her home." I am watching these kids, these wonderful and warm and compassionate and in this moment logical kids sticking up for me. Saying what I had been begging adult medical professionals to say for days. The next day, I'm released. My father picks me up, and at this point in my life, I hadn't seen much of him. I can tell he doesn't really believe me when I tell him what happened. I go from staying at my dad's to staying at a friend's, and when my mom is released from the hospital, she gets my brother from where he'd been staying. When I finally get back home, my mother greets me with a smile on her face and a big Mylar balloon bouquet, as if I'd been on a pleasure cruise. I know she doesn't remember her episodes, but there's always evidence of them in what's missing or broken. So I look around and use my usual cleanup. The time she broke all the glasses in the kitchen, I just went to the store and bought plastic cups, or I just throw away whatever she lit on fire and it's never spoken of again. But this time was different, because she got home before me. My brother and the helpful neighbor had swept up the glass and thrown out the guitar, and my mother's mess was cleaned up without me. See, what was broken this time was my belief that my mother could ever really love me. What was missing this time was my ability to go back to business as usual. That fall, when I pack my things to go live in the dorms at NYU, I'm full of conflict. I hope that my mother won't be as violent to my little brother as she was to me. And she hadn't so far, but anything can happen with her. The day I leave for school, I stand in front of the house with my brother, and I say, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry I'm leaving you. But I have to go." He's not nearly as emotional as I am. I'm a mess. It was a passing of the torch of caring for our mom. And in the years to come, he stepped up and did just that. My mother died 6 weeks ago. And at the funeral, I almost fell over at the sight of her body in the casket, and it was my little brother, now a married father of two, who held me up when I couldn't take another step forward. At our mother's funeral, my brother took care of me the way I had taken care of him. The way we both took care of her.
The brilliant, the talented Pia Glenn. Music composed by Alex Mandel, performed by Alex and the Snap Players, David Brandt and Tim Frey. Now, Snappers, if you follow the news, you know that what we do, the simple act of broadcasting real people's real stories, it's under assault. Because this ain't fake news. Now, we appreciate that advertisers support this show, but the heavy lifting in producing Snap each and every week has always been left to our listeners. And asking is terrifying. But we walk the plank every week knowing that you are going to catch us. And we have a super short window to prove, even in this environment, that Snappers will step up at snapjudgment.org. That Snappers understand that true stories are a disruptive act. $2, $200, whatever works for you. Just make sure that something works for you. Do it right now at snapjudgment.org. Pause the show. Go ahead, pause the program and support the storytelling you love at snapjudgment.org. It's the only way that this happens. Awesome gifts available. And it's because the thing we have, this community, it is special. It is so fragile. It only works if you're a part of it. Support Snap Storytelling right now at snapjudgment.org. Thanks.